Welcome, everyone, to the Screamcast episode 85. I am Sean DeRager. And with me is Brad Henderson.
Wait, opening a beer?
Coke Zero. Beer? Coke Zero today.
With rum?
Nope, just Coke Zero. I need to wake up a little bit, which sounds like you need...
What the fuck do you wake up with Coke Zero?
You need a shot of something up your nose to wake up.
Wow.
With us as well is BJ Colangelo.
Hi.
She's back.
I am back.
I always go through BJ withdrawals when you're not here.
I go with BJ withdrawals all the time.
Well, that sounds like a personal problem for both of you.
Married for 10 years. That's all I got to say. 11 years now. Holy shit.
Wow.
You're old.
Gross. As fuck.
Yep.
Do you know what I was doing 11 years ago? I was a freshman in high school.
Oh, yeah. All right. This is not the Make Sean Feel Old cast. This is the Screamcast. Today we're going to be talking about the new Arrow Black Cat set, which is pretty fantastic. We're also going to be talking a...
Wow.
Are we talking? Because you sound like you're doing a great job at it right now.
You're really trying to get blank, this
sound. Brain fart all of a sudden.
Route 666.
Yes. But I was trying to be witty, and I was going to say...
Was there a pun coming? I'm glad we stopped the pun.
Lou Diamond Phillips vehicle.
Oh my God, I suck today.
You were trying to make a vehicle pun, and we destroyed it, and I'm glad that we did. Because
thank you. It would have sucked anyway.
Too much. I totally forgot
Lou Diamond Phillips' name all of a sudden.
It's fine. I would have left. I would have been like, I'm glad you all enjoyed my 2 minutes of being back on the show. Peace.
I'm out. Sean sucks. And then we're going to be talking some 80s sex comedy-ish stuff. Valley Girls. Valet girls.
Jesus Christ, dude. Just jump into a fucking segment or something.
I'm buying you Hooked on Phonics for Secret Santa. I mean, there's only three of us, so the likelihood of me getting you is pretty high.
Well, the problem is, like, I on some of these nights, I jump straight from the craziness of getting my kids to bed right into talking about movies, and my brain is fried.
Maybe you should make that a new tradition. Like, kids, tonight we're going to watch some Hooked on Phonics.
Yeah.
We're going to learn how to read and shit. But really, you're just cross-training for the podcast. Like, they'll never know, and they're getting an education.
Right, yeah,
like,
yeah.
Everyone's
just getting my brain going in that direction before... I gotcha. Okay.
Mm-hmm. I'm just looking out for you.
Can we just restart the show? Can we restart it?
No.
Nope.
Fuck. All right. Well, I'm going to compose myself here, but while I do that, let's jump into what's on your doorstep.
Holy cow. I almost forgot.
We'll get the door.
Pizza.
I will go first.
Oh.
Because.
There we go. Yes. You got to give Sean some breathing.
Initiative. Yeah.
You gotta give Sean some breathing room.
It's not gonna be much to breathe because I haven't watched a whole lot. So some of the cool things that are on my doorstep. I watched Last Shift. It's on the Netflix. Oh god damn, I cannot think of what the dude's name is who directed it.
Anthony DeBlasi something.
Yes,
I got the Blu-ray right here somewhere.
DeBlasi. I really liked it. There were a lot of things about it that I, you know, wasn't too hot on, but there's a lot of really cool in-camera editing tricks, obviously crossed with a lot of, you know, CGI things. I really liked lead actress. It's kind of a one-woman vehicle. There's a lot of really interesting things in it. Some of it's a little paint-by-numbers, but for the most part, it definitely caught my attention, and it's nice when those sorts of films just kind of pop up on Netflix and you don't really know anything about it. That's kind of similar to how I found out with Taking a Deborah Logan and a couple other films like that, where it just just kind of gets dumped there, and you don't really know much about it, and you watch, and you're like, you know what, I'm glad I did that. You know, that's a lot better than a lot of the shit that ends up getting dumped on Netflix. But I'm pretty sold on all of his filmography at this point. There hasn't been anything he's made that I disliked. So that was fun.
Here's a little trick for Netflix. Like most magnet releasing movies will end up on Netflix. So if you're browsing like Best Buy, like I do, this is the trick I'm learning. Every time I buy the damn movie, a week later, it's on Netflix.
And so usually hold your cheap. Damn horses.
So hold my horse, hold your horses, wait a week. They'll be on there. And also, I think most of the IFC Midnight stuff ends up on Netflix either the week it's released on Blu-ray or the next week.
And you could have saved $10 of money not buying the last shift.
Because Stung and Bloodsucking Bastards are both on Netflix now as well. And, of course, I got the Blu-rays sitting right here on my shelf. Damn it!
Dude, you need to watch those movies before you buy them because they are not worth buying at all.
They were cheap. But
I would have bought...
I'm mending my... Like, I'm fixing my ways.
You would have bought Last Shift?
Honestly, yeah. I would have.
It was $9.99.
It doesn't matter.
I would have paid it. I would have supported that because I will support... don't get me
wrong. You haven't seen the movie yet, Sean. This is a conversation between BJ and myself.
The one thing that I will say is that it is very unfortunate that it came out right after Let Us Pray. Like, that's unfortunate. Because
it's very similar to the setting.
A very similar idea, and I think Let Us Pray is executed and a lot more interesting. It's better executed and much more interesting to look at.
I mean it's prettier as well. I mean, see the thing is with Last Shift,
I completely agree.
I think the guy's talented, but he's just hasn't made a movie I enjoyed.
And like, that's fine. You may not be his target audience. I mean, I really have liked the stuff that he's done so far. So I think maybe just his style is, you know, something that meshes well with me personally.
It just seems like he has like a good idea to start, but it hits that about 20, 30 minute mark where it loses me. Because it happened with the flashlight sequence.
I've been the opposite, where I've been, you know, kind of hesitant, like, I don't know. And then something will happen. And I'm like, all right, now I'm in. I don't know. I think that's very interesting that, you know, the parts that are losing you are what's keeping me in. I don't know. I mean, it's on Netflix. It's a fuckload better than a lot of the stuff that gets dumped on there. I think that it's a film that, you know, is, you know, making the rounds pretty much just by word of mouth. So if you want to support some original stuff and some independent work, like, check it out. I really think you should. So that was kind of like the big movie that I watched. I haven't really gotten the chance to watch a lot of stuff. I've been working a lot, but I will say I have become utterly obsessed with the Lore podcast, which is a storytelling podcast, which is why I don't feel guilty promoting another podcast. But it's this guy, Aaron Mankey, and every other week he picks a theme like poltergeists or zombies or vampires or whatever. And he talks about like real life instances where that kind of folklore has infiltrated, you know, real life. So like, for example, they did one about vampires, and then they discussed like something that happened in the 1800s where they were convinced this like family was like draining other people of blood. So then the whole town like killed this family. Stuff like that, which I think is really fascinating. And, you know, he'll relate it back to how these old legends and lores have influenced kind of the culture that we have now. So like the poltergeist episode, obviously he mentions the film, but for the most part, it's talking about stuff that was documented in like the 1800s of homes specifically like fucking with people. It's really fascinating. They're quick listens. They're about a half hour apiece. And I just like binge listened, over the last couple of weeks on my commutes. It's really, really compelling stuff. And I mean, if any of you are screenwriters, it's just fuck. It's plenty of material for your picking and choosing. Cause it's all stuff that really happened that, you know, no one really talks about, but everyone knows what a zombie is, but nobody knows, you know, the real life instances of zombies in the 1700s. So,
Jesus.
It's really cool stuff. It's called Lore. It's just Lore podcast. But it's really, really cool stuff. There's one about, dolls. Like, it's really fucking unsettling. Like, that episode was the one that kind of just, like, got me glued. I was like, all right, yep, I'm into it. And the dudes, you know, he's a decent storyteller. He's, you know, they're really well written, but perfect, you know, 30-minute commute, crank it out, listen to some weird stuff, and then, you know, realize how fucked up the world has always been and how we have always been, you know, kind of Salem Witch Trial-esque type people. It's really interesting. So
nice.
if you're into that sort of stuff, check it out. But for the most part, that's been it. I'm so boring. I've had nothing, no time to do anything. I'm shooting a short this weekend. So I've been kind of balls deep in that.
Balls deep.
Yep. Balls deep. That's pretty much all I've been doing. So I'm actually looking forward to talking to you guys about something different because I haven't gotten to do anything different.
We'll be talking about, I mean, I haven't been able to watch anything extra this week either. I'm trying to think of what I've watched, but I watched Southpaw. Got Southpaw.
Oh, yeah.
It's not a horror flick, but it's pretty badass. I mean, Jake Gyllenhaal's, you know, he's hitting it out of the park lately. So it's so weird because the last Jake Gyllenhaal movie I saw was
Is that how you say his last name? Have I been wrong my whole life?
Is it Gyllenhaal?
Gyllenhaal. You're fucking me up now because I've been Gyllenhaal. Listening to you.
It's my bad.
I feel like I'm
could say Gyllenhaal or Gyllenhaal.
Yeah, I've heard Gyllenhaal. Gyllenhaal.
Gyllenhaal.
Gyllenhaal. Listen, necromantics. It's better step
dear
off.
Dear Jake and Maggie, how do we say your name? Thanks. I just want to know.
I'm looking at, I would say Gyllenhaal. I was saying it wrong. Anyway, but he's really becoming one of my favorite actors just because of he's disappearing into these roles. Like Nightcrawler, I couldn't take my eyes off him. And then Southpaw, he just totally disappears in this role as this like washed up boxer. It's pretty paint by numbers as far as a boxing movie goes once it gets going, but it's a strong flick. I would highly recommend it. And some brutal fights.
He's
going
through
scenes.
His reconnaissance, man.
Mm-hmm. That's really all I watched. I got the Hobbit Battle of Five Armies and started watching the extras on that while the kids are running around.
Awful.
The extras.
Like the worst.
The extras
it's so
are
crazy. Like, I had no idea that there was fucking, like, goddamn 7 billion Hobbit movies. That this
There's three of them. This one, these are the extended versions.
I'm so out of touch.
And the extended version of this last one is rated R for the violence, which is funny that a children's book, it was written as like a children's book, got split into three movies, and the last installment of the extended, the regular version was PG-13, but the extended version rated R. But I haven't rewatched all of them yet. But the reason why I buy these is because I love the detail that Peter Jackson and all them put into the making of, because there's like an 8-hour making of documentary, basically. It goes through everything.
That's
and
like
if you're a fan of like the
sleep session,
it's for me though, it's really super interesting. They do a really good job. They did it on the Lord of the Rings movies on the extended.
8 hours. Like that's not an exaggeration.
It's, I mean, they're all in installments. I mean, I'm 3 hours in, I mean, but, 8 hours of special features, I should say.
Just got sleepier.
But yeah, that anyway, sounds terrible.
I love watching how they make these films, and it's
because you're old.
Way more entertaining than the film itself. But what's interesting is you can see how Peter Jackson inherited. Like he was just going to be a producer. He didn't want to direct him, and then Guillermo del Toro backed out after a year and a half of pre-production. And Peter Jackson, instead of using all the stuff that Del Toro had done, had designed and everything, he scrapped it all and decided to rush these into production. And you can see, I mean, I'm surprised he didn't die of stress in the making of these films, because at one point Peter Jackson is saying, I have no idea what to do in this scene right now. Let's just keep shooting. Like, there's no storyboards, pretty much no script, and he's just shooting shit on a green screen. Just... And after that, he decides to take like a few months off and actually storyboard the battle scene that they want to film, which turned into the third film.
But it sounds like a nightmare.
It had to have been a nightmare for Peter Jackson. So anyway,
you just talked me out of watching the movie.
The movies are okay. I think if you can separate yourself, this is the third one. So this would benefit
three Lord of the Rings movies and three Hobbit movies.
There's no reason for there to be three.
No,
it makes no
Hobbit
sense at all.
Movies. Absolutely no fucking reason. That was definitely a cash grab.
How the fuck did these movies start coming out that third one's out on Blu-ray already?
Yeah. The theatrical cut was out last year.
Oh my god.
But anyway, enough of that. Brad, I know we're going to be talking about these films in another episode, but I did want to bring up that I got the slasher video flicks, and one is not slasher, but it's Killer Workout, Shock 'Em Dead, Deadly Prey, and then Deadliest Prey.
Yeah.
The slasher video ones, because Brad, you had said something about people kind of ripping apart the quality on these, yeah. And I didn't really see any reviews where they were trashing them. Maybe you could expand. But I did pop these in to check the quality. And it's like, they're shot on video. What the fuck do you want? What are you expecting, everyone? So anyway, I'm excited to actually dig into these flicks and talk about them on a future episode. But I wanted to ask you, Brad, who were the ones that were kind of trashing these? Or was it just forums or bullshit like that? Or
well, I just kept, like, it kept popping up. You know, a few places on Twitter, on Facebook, and then I checked, you know, just looking at forums to see what people would say, because it was, you know, I know when they very first, when Slasher Video first said, hey, we're going to be doing this, would you guys prefer DVDs or Blu-rays? And the majority of people said Blu-rays, because no one really likes to buy DVDs anymore, which I, you know, can understand. I always say go for Blu-ray if you can, just because of sales, because people don't want to buy DVDs anymore. So the general consensus was that they wanted Blu-rays, so that's what they did. And then they threw disclaimers up saying, hey, well, you know, the master is gone. You know, the negative, there's no more prints of this movie. All we have is, you know, it depends on which title you're talking about.
Two of them
about.
Had a beta, and then one was a 1-inch tape.
Yeah, so, I mean, you have, I think the 1-inch tape was like Deadly Prey.
It was Shock 'Em Dead.
I need you to relax.
it's all that Coke Zero, man. He's out of control.
Jesus Christ.
Watch out.
So, it's one of those things, I think, that you're damned if you do, damned if you don't type situations, that if you don't put it on Blu-ray, you're not going to have the sales. If you put it on Blu-ray, people aren't going to understand that, hey, I have this Blu-ray of The Hobbit that looks amazing, but then my Blu-ray of fucking Deadly Prey looks like shit. Well, you have to go back and look at the quality. The Slasher Video was very open about it. They never tried to hide anything. They said, I'm going to sneeze. They didn't say that. I'm actually going to sneeze, I think. Nope.
I hope that's what they said. Okay? Like, they get a press release. Like.
So, you know, they came out and said, hey, you know, this is what's going to be happening. Okay, that's fine. They put the disclaimer up on Amazon. Dude, when I got my Slasher Video package from Olive, there's a fucking letter in there. Stating about the qualities. Like,
then
you
people
know,
have no reason to bitch and
well, no, no, no. Like, I'm saying, like, the distributor was telling me, hey, you know, like, even for people that were getting screeners, it was like red lights flashing, like, hey, before you fucking say anything, like, here's a list of the reasons why and what's going on. Because people, like, are that dumb. They don't know, like, where kind of the source material comes from, I guess. Mm-hmm. And I've been seeing that a lot lately.
Yeah.
You know, and people that bought it weren't looking into it. Then Diabolik, I don't know what the whole point of Diabolik, but Diabolik DVD completely dropped Olive Films. They're not carrying any more Olive Film releases.
Did they throw out a statement or something?
No.
Oh.
They're just not doing it. Because, I mean, you have that whole, you have a huge rally of people. Because here's the thing, is that it hurts. If it was Slasher Video with somebody else or Slasher Video by themselves, it probably wouldn't be as bad, but being that Olive has kind of that really bad rap already with things, is that now this is on top of it. And then you have the whole Roar situation where, you
know, fuck that.
People didn't like that transfer. You know, you always have kind of shoddy transfers in a way. They're old HD masters. Same fucking thing Scream Factory does, by the way. The only thing that's different Scream Factory does is special features and new artwork. Let's just say,
bring up the Roar thing really quick. J.R. Bookwalter was brought in to help save that transfer from the transfer that Olive originally received.
Yeah.
So it could have been a lot worse, people, and I thought it looked pretty damn good. But that's the thing. That's what I'm saying, though. I popped these in. They look better than VHS.
Here's the thing.
I think they look fun. I can't wait to sit down and watch these things. Grab myself some beer and.
Here's what people don't understand about the slasher titles is that the fucking slasher titles that Jesus has released, those movies aren't on DVD. They're on VHS, and Deadly Prey goes for like $100 on tape. And it's never been released on DVD. So what the fuck do you want? Like, he's given the movie another life no matter what the quality is. Yeah. So it hurts a little bit thinking that, man, people really don't care about the movies anymore. It seems like watching a movie, I know I bitch about transfers and then I'll always be the first, but you know, fucking slasher video Blu-rays weren't $25 like some other companies. They were $10.99 when they first came up on Amazon. So $10.99 for a fucking beta tape master, I don't really have a problem with. And plus, they were up front. A lot of these other companies release it and wait for people to say something and then address it.
Yeah. Anyway, so that's all I wanted to bring up. But I'm now that I have these, man, I'm super pumped to talk about them.
They're great. They're great movies. Maybe aside from not Deadliest Prey is a great movie, but because it was
Brad has a better transfer.
Made after the fact, but I mean, yeah, the movies that they released are great. He saved them, you know, from you know, disappearing. Because if something happened to that beta tape or something, you're gonna source it from a VHS tape, which is gonna look a lot worse because beta looks better than VHS from what they have the masters of. Yeah.
Well, so I'm glad that they at least had a VHS master for Dog Soldiers for that Scream Factory release.
The shade. Dang. Oh my god.
All right, Brad,
what's
on your doorstep, man?
All
right. I had a couple things, quickly go through them. I received Kino Classics. Kino Classics doesn't release too many movies, but they are completely 100% on board of restoring the fuck out of movies. I think they did the Death Kiss earlier this year. Now they have The Mask from 1961. Kind of a psychotronic, batshit crazy movie. It's very low key to start, but there's a 30-minute mark. And it is a fucking nightmare. And I was like sitting there, I was like, man, this is like legitimately like kind of scary for being 1961 and being how desensitized I am watching this film. I was like, holy shit, this is legitimately scary. I can't imagine sitting in the theater alone in 1961, not being, you know, desensitized to what we are now, seeing this for the first time. It's a fucking nightmare. It really is. It's this archaeologist who gets this mask that when he hears voices that he has to put it on, and when he puts it on, he goes into this nightmare world. And he's also doesn't know if he's being possessed in order to commit these crimes, why he has the mask on. But about the 30-minute mark is the very first time, because it's very low key, you know, just dialogue heavy, talking about the mask, the artifacts, and then he puts the mask on, and it legitimately looks fucking incredible. Plus, they restored this. The Toronto International Film Festival was in on restoring this movie. They also did it in 3D, because that was originally how the film was released. So there's a 3D version on it as well. I didn't watch that because I didn't know what to expect, but the nightmare world is pretty badass looking. So being it's black and white and old school, the 3D probably looks pretty cool. So I'm going to give it a shot. But definitely surprised this isn't more popular than it is because of kind of how scary it can be. And there's three sequences with the Nightmare Mask, and it is fucking incredible. So definitely pick that up. It should be fairly cheap. Also pick up the other Kino classics. I think it's called the Death Kiss. Is Deadly Kiss or Death Kiss? I can't remember, but it's a really fucking, really awesome movie. It is these guys that are filming a movie. There's a murder on set, so they have to have everybody on set, and they don't let them leave, and they only let the police come in to do the detective work to try to find out how this person was shot on set with, you know, they had all these, of course, prop guns, but there's one gun that's real, so they're trying to find out where it came from. Not really a horror film. It's kind of a genre mashup. It has a lot of comedy. You know, it has horror. It has action. It's a very well done picture for, you know, you just, I guess being that I'm so desensitized to that stuff, I don't look at films that are older like they're going to surprise me, I guess, because it's already been done. But it seems that a lot of these older films that are kind of unheard of are surprising me more and more than what new, like I sit down and watch a new movie and it doesn't surprise me at all. It's very, you know, by the book. These movies don't. They like legitimately, the reason why I think they're so unique is that they didn't have to do much to be different because not a lot of that stuff was done yet. I mean, we weren't even in the 70s horror yet. We're still in the 50s and 60s.
Well, there's no unwritten formula that they're pressured to follow. Otherwise, audiences are going to be like, well, I wanted to do this.
Yeah. So it's, you know, it's kind of crazy and unique to watch these films unfold. And then nothing else was like it after it as well, which I think is really unique. I mean, we have genre mashups and we have, you know, nightmares, of course, nightmarish movies, but nothing that followed that formula that this movie created. I don't know if it's because it wasn't popular at the time. Now they're being restored or what, but I mean, we all have those psychotronic films, but this is definitely one of the more unique ones that I've seen. So definitely pick that up.
Very cool.
Next was, oh my God, probably the worst movie I've seen in my life. The Garbage Pail Kids movie.
Oh God.
Seen it?
No.
I watched the first 10 minutes, Brad, when we were talking about it.
I regret every second.
I couldn't get past that 10 minutes. I said, nope, not going to buy this thing. I'm not going to support this thing. Forget it.
I think pretty much everybody knows about it, so I'm not going to go, this is a collector's edition for some ungodly reason, but this is also known as one of the worst movies of all time. It's based off of Topps Trading Cards. That was kind of a parody of Cabbage Patch Kids. Idiotic cards that did really, really well that became into a live-action movie, and it's fucking fart jokes. That's it. It's terrible. I don't know. Maybe it's one of those nostalgia things that you'll like it if you
were
a kid. That's
exactly what it is. 1,000%.
But it's going to be, I have a feeling it's one of those things. It's like, oh, Scream Factory release it. I like it now. Yeah. Good movie. No, it fucking sucks.
Well, I think that they're trying to do, not Scream Factory, but just the Garbage Pail Kids branding in particular, I think is trying to make a comeback.
Yeah, they are. I was looking at the cards. They've been doing the cards every year.
The cards are coming back up. I know Freight Rags just did like a set of shirts. But even Walgreens, they're doing like vinyl figures of them, and they're in like kind of like the trading cards where, you know, you don't know which one you're going to get, but you get the vinyl figure. I got two of them. They're really good quality and they look just like the ones off the cards.
I'm a fan of the cards and everything else. That's just, it's crazy.
It's weird that it's coming back like this.
But it's crazy what they did to the movie.
Yeah, the movie is very bizarre. Like, it's just.
It should have been animated.
The fucking, you know, people look like they're wearing fucking helmets that have eyes painted on them. It just really, just a really bizarre movie. Willow watched it. She giggled during every time someone farted. So I guess that's a plus.
What kind of stuff do they put on this as a collector's edition? Is there a retrospective documentary?
New interviews and stuff.
Okay.
That's it. It's just new interviews. It's pretty much all it says. So
why the hell do they do a collector's edition?
It's a nostalgia bank. That's all it is.
Okay.
Yeah, they're gonna sell more if they do collector's edition.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have a slipcase, Brad? Is the slipcase on there? Your slipcase? I need my slipcase.
Yes, there is a slipcase on it. Dude, that's the best voice you've ever done in your life.
Anyone who complains about slipcases and everything like that, that's automatically the voice I give you when I'm reading your posts, by the way.
So your entire Twitter feed is that voice.
I unfollowed basically all of the Blu-ray groups and stuff on Facebook. I'm so sick of it. Yeah. And
I'm like, I'm not part of it because I just want to see people bitch because I think it's funny.
Yeah.
Next, I am going to be super nice while reviewing this movie. This movie was written and directed by Chris Alexander, who's the editor in chief of Fangoria.
Not anymore.
Not anymore. he quit to become a filmmaker.
And he's in charge of Shock Till You Drop.
Huh?
Isn't he in charge of Shock Till You Drop now, or is he writing for them, or he's doing something with them now?
Did he take over after Sam?
I believe so. I don't know. I've not been on the internet in like 6 days. Yeah, yeah. It's really weird. I feel like I fell in a black hole.
So anyways, Chris Alexander. That said, I was expecting maybe a little bit more. This is actually, they put two films on this Blu-ray. It's called Queen of Blood, and no, it's not the John Saxon movie, which is also released on Blu-ray recently, which is kind of bizarre, I think. But anyways, there's the debut that he did called Blood for Irina, which is the kind of the prequel to this movie. I went ahead and watched them both. I don't know how I did it, but I did. Both silent films, they do the exact same thing, just in a different setting. But we'll jump to Queen of Blood because that is what I'm holding in my hand. So Chris Alexander is obviously a huge fan of Euro horror. So he tries to emulate that with, it looks, I could have sworn that half of this stuff is shot on video, but it's probably just a small DV camera. Silent film, extremely pretentious. It's one of those movies that if you cut out all the, let me film this spider climbing on a web for 15 minutes, your movie would be only 15 minutes. There's so many sequences where the fucking, like, I understand, like, showing beauty, showing that stuff, but when you're doing it to make your movie an hour and a half, it's not very fun. There's a lot of that. It's dragged out a lot, and plus not having any dialogue really hurt the film because you're just waiting, you're wanting it to get to that next scene and wanting that next scene to happen and next scene to happen just because you want it to be over. Which I'm not saying that to be an asshole, but it's very slow paced. It's like watching the worst Jess Franco movie, which I think is saying a lot.
But were Jess Franco movies silent? That's what I don't understand. Why did he do a silent film?
That's the part where it just feels really pretentious to me. Like, give it a shot and see what I'm saying.
Yeah, I have it right here. It's on my stack of to watch.
And it's like, I don't mind silent films. I don't mind that at all. I don't mind what he was trying to do. But when you watch it, you can get that feeling that, oh, man, like, you really wanted to achieve this, but you couldn't at all. Make your own movie. Don't try to recreate something, especially a fucking Jess Franco movie. Jesus. I don't know. It's at least it's only an hour and 15 minutes. And it's a vampire flick, and that's it. I really don't. If I keep talking, I'll just end up being mean. So don't be mean. I don't want to be a total asshole. Dick.
Just don't be mean.
How is Queen of Blood in comparison to Blood for Irina? Because Blood for Irina, I didn't hate. I mean, it was, but you kind of nailed it. It was like, okay, I see what you're going for.
It's the exact, necessarily... you know, I watched them both and I'm not kidding. It's the exact same movie, just in a different setting.
Okay.
Like Blood for Irina is like present times. Mm-hmm. Queen of the Blood is set like in the 1800s, but has okay. like a village style type thing. It's very okay. bizarre. Yeah. It just treads the same ground. Like, scene for scene almost, where it's like, hey, what's going on? Oh, you're bitten. What's happening again? Oh, you got bit too, son of a bitch. Shoot. And it just fucking keeps going.
I wish that that's what the actual dialogue was, but with like the old like silent film title cards, like, oh, you got bitten, shoot. That would be great.
So next is another Screen Factory release, which is also a UK Arrow Blu-ray, which is The Car, which I've always been a huge fan of.
Yes.
Yeah. Fucking James Brolin is fucking kicks ass in this movie. It's about a murderous car that's in Utah that starts fucking killing people. And it's up to James Brolin's character, who is a police officer. And fucking hunts down the car.
Nice.
He's a new sheriff, but yeah, I mean, he's still a fucking policeman.
I've had the Arrow Blu-ray forever and haven't even watched it yet.
Oh, you haven't?
No,
dude, it's really fucking good.
Yeah,
some
I really want to watch it.
Some great, you know, stunts with the cars. Unbelievable stunts, like some really badass shit. I mean, it's fucking, you know, predates Christine. It's like Christine on crack. You know, where the car's relentless.
Do either of you watch a regular show with the kids?
No.
No.
There is an episode of regular show that pays homage to The Car. And the first time I saw it, I was like, are they really making a reference to the fucking car right now? And what they do is they go to the video store and they rent The Car. Like, or it's a movie called Ello Govna instead. And it's about a murderous car. And then, like, they get nightmares about the car and think that it's coming after them. But, like, you watch it and you're like, this is The Car for children. And it's brilliant. And no, I don't think anybody who watches this episode has any idea what it's referencing. But now, like, since this release is coming out, more people are seeing it. You're like, oh, my God, like, kid shows are getting... so, like, underground referential.
Yeah.
I track it down if you can. It's 15 minutes. It's a good episode, and it's always funny to see, you know, something kind of somewhat obscure make its way into, you know, the forefront of pop culture, especially for kids.
It's pretty badass.
Yeah, right? Like, they also have that show does a lot of things. Like, little things will pop in and out. Like, they do, like... they do a big Evil Dead episode. There's one that's in reference to Suspiria. There's one that's referenced into, there's a Day of the Dead one where just like all the arms come out of the walls. like just little itty bitty things will pop up here and there. And you're like, oh my God, did they just make references? They did. Holy shit. And this is for like preteens. This is great. So yeah, I highly recommend doing that back to back feature with your children's.
I want to watch regular show now just to see that. That's
yeah,
a cartoon,
you should.
Right?
Yeah, and it's way funnier than it has
it's
any
on
right to be.
Adult Swim or something?
No, it's on Cartoon Network like during the day. Like it's not even like their adult channel, which is crazy to me that there's an episode that's 100% a ripoff of Evil Dead, and there's even like a character that's Ash. And he's like fighting zombies and like looking at the camera and making like stupid witty puns. And I'm like, none of the kids watching this are going to get it. But like, we're at that time frame now where all of the, like, you know, your age people are having children. So now the references, you know, like how every Disney movie has references that are more for the adults than it is for the children. Well, now, you know, the things that we're into are things like Evil Dead. So those are the references that are popping up in kids shows
that are meant to, you know, appeal to the adults that are stuck watching cartoons with their kids.
Right. You know, I think my kids were watching this once and there was some sort of reference that I was like, had to, you know, stop what I was doing to kind of be like, what are they watching in there?
Yeah. And it's,
I can't remember exactly what it was though.
It's so weird that that's what's happening. Like, I remember when I was a kid growing up, like, you know, the newer episodes of Scooby-Doo would reference things that, like, my parents watched. But now, like, the kids' shows are referencing things that, like, I'm watching. And that's weird to me. I'm like, oh, fuck, I'm an adult. Like, that's, I don't like it. But it's kind of cool to see how that sort of, you know, now making its way into children's entertainment. It's just, it's weird. It's a really surreal kind of experience.
Very cool.
So, but yeah, it's, the Arrow, Blu-ray is the same transfer because it's just an old HD master. They didn't do a scan. The only difference is that the special features on the Arrow release are, better. They go a little more in depth with the filmmakers and with commentaries and stuff like that. This mainly just has interviews, new interviews with the director and shit like that. But a lot of fun. I always say sit down and fucking watch Duel in the car together as a double feature and your mind will be blown. Cause nice. It kind of has that same feel, that same cinematography, that same, like those dirt roads, you know, or watch that and The Car and what's that movie? Jamie Lee Curtis and Stacey Keach, Road Games. Is it Stacey Keach in Road Games? I can't remember.
Sure.
Road Games is out of print, but check it out. Last but not least, I talked about this film before. I watched it again because it came out on Blu-ray and Willow wanted to see it. But I rewatched A Christmas Horror Story. Still didn't dig it. That's it.
It's a little early for Christmas movies, don't you think?
Well, I mean, we're getting close.
Getting close.
Not even Thanksgiving yet.
I know, but around this time, once you kind of...
DJ, it's like a week 2 weeks away.
Like, look, a week before Thanksgiving, I'll start, you know, if people want to get in the Christmas spirit, that's just fine. For me, Christmas happens once Thanksgiving is done, then I break out. That weekend, I break out all the decorations and crap, but not before. But hey, if you want to get the Christmas spirit a little bit early, fine with me, but just not too early. Let's let Halloween breathe a little bit. Let's get through Halloween. Let's get up to Thanksgiving and then Jingle All the Way and all that bullshit.
Jingle All the Way.
Dude, that movie fucking rules. I love Jingle All the Way. No. It's so
This is where
funny.
We have the age break here.
I don't care. Watching a generation Sinbad gap. Fucking break kills me. Like,
I tried so watching it again last year just because I was like, hey, this is probably really silly and fun. No, it's not. It is a fucking... That's a nightmare.
It's so good. Oh, man, it's so good. It kills me. I love it. And yeah, it is a generational thing, and I'm totally fine with it.
It's fine. It's like Space Jam, you know? I mean, Space Jam is another generation gap. I don't understand the love for Space Jam.
Oh, Space Jam was like the second movie I saw in theaters.
Hey, it's fine.
Put it like that.
But see, but now that this stuff happens, I don't give people shit when they don't like movies like Goonies. It's fine. I get it. Goonies is awesome. I love it.
Goonies is awesome.
You can fuck off.
I don't know.
There's not
too many people that don't like Goonies. I think it's
I did meet somebody who violently hated Monster Squad.
I think that's just blaming the people trying to be against the grain.
Goddamn
no,
hipsters.
It wasn't though. It's like he's one of the like the big wigs at like the big like city cinemas here, like that are like weird art house ones. He never saw Monster Squad as a kid, and everyone kept telling him, like, oh my god, you have to check this out. You're going to love it. And he watched it, and he's like, I don't love it. He's like, these kids are dicks. I don't like them. And it's like, well, yeah. And like, you rewatch it, and you look at it with like a sense of fondness because you were that dick kid when Monster Squad came out. But if you watch it as an adult and you've never seen it and you have no sort of relationship to it at all, you're like, these kids are fucking assholes. I don't care. Die. I hope you get eaten by a werewolf. You're a piece of shit.
But it's all good. You know, the nostalgia buttons are good. It's fine. All right. Yep. Let's jump into our feature presentation. Today we are talking about Arrow's beautiful box set called Black Cats. It is a double feature of Your Vice is a Locked Room and Only I Have the Key and The Black Cat.
So let's jump into
the first one, which sounds like a 1995 hardcore band. Your Vice is a Locked Room and Only I Have the Key, directed by Sergio Martino.
That was such a good introduction.
Because it's so accurate.
It reminds me of all those pretentious hardcore bands in the 90s.
They weren't a band name, they were a sentence.
Right, or they would have songs be sentences. It's like, really?
Like every Fall Out Boy song?
Get up. Well, Fall Out Boy kind of stole that from the hardcore bands.
Yes, they did. Well, because Fall Out Boy used to be a hardcore band, but we're going to get a tangent.
Yeah. Okay. Anyway. We're going to go on a rabbit trail. We don't want to go into a Fall Out Boy rabbit trail or a 90s hardcore band.
No. Neither of those rabbit holes.
We just need to stop.
So let's talk about this one first. I mean, both of these movies I don't think I'd heard of, even though The Black Cat was a Lucio Fulci movie. I hadn't really heard of it or paid attention. This one, though, Your Vice. I'm just gonna. How do you shorten this goddamn thing? Vice. I'm gonna say Vice.
Y-V-I-S-L-R-A-O-I-H-T-K.
You can just call it I Have the Key. There you go.
I Have the Key. Whatever. The Sergio Martino film. I absolutely adored this film, and not just because there's copious amounts of nudity. Edwige Finesse, is that her name?
You almost got it.
Beautiful. It's, anyway, this movie is...
You better say her name correctly, because she's fucking iconic in Italian cinema.
Well, yeah, she went to be like a pretty badass producer and stuff.
I mean, she played in a lot... I mean, she's like the queen of fucking giallo. Films.
Well,
she's in a lot of them.
Edwige Finesse.
Know how to read. You can't hold that against him.
Edwige Finesse.
Okay, stop. But anyways, yeah, she worked with Sergio Martino quite a bit. So
yeah,
they were. You've been cutting me off, saying yeah.
Yep.
I was telling you a story.
Go for it.
No, I'm done. No, Jesus Christ.
I was in the middle of giving my reaction to the film.
Oh, go ahead. That there's boobs.
No,
there's a whole lot. Like, I like this movie because it gave me a funny pants feeling.
It's definitely Italian. It's definitely 70s. That's for sure. With the with the freedom in the film. But what I loved about the film was the giallo feel, the mystery. The mystery to it, and the fact that I actually was surprised with the resolution of the film. It actually took me by surprise. And, you know, a lot of films, especially like mysteries and things like that, you kind of figure things out as you go. But I was really on board with this film, and I was aware of the Black Cat story, the Edgar Allan Poe story. But the twist that they took with this film and how they incorporated that story into this film was really fantastic, and I loved it. That's all I'm going to say so far. First time watch.
Yes. Go ahead, BJ. I'll let you go.
I was going to say I don't dislike it at all. I actually rather enjoy it. I think that it's a beautiful film. The first time I saw it, I think it was probably a little too young. I was very much in my pretentious, like, teen phase where I tracked down, like, every giallo film that I could just to look cool. So I think, you know, upon rewatching it, a little bit of that sort of lingered in with it. And I was like, I've seen better, I've seen worse. It's fine. I really enjoy The Black Cat, so when we start talking on that, I'll dig more into that. But I Have the Key, I mean, I like it. It's not something that I'm gonna, you know, sit at home and be like, you know what I really want to watch right now? This long ass fucking titled movie. that's just kind of my thoughts on it. And yes, she's real hot, so I agree
still
with you
is.
There. Yeah, very wolf, yes.
I mean, Anita Strindberg is not so bad either.
Oh my god.
I like when you just try to, you know, like pick out female names.
That's her name.
No, I know. It's just like you're reading it. You can tell that you're like looking out. Anita Strindberg. That's what it is. I first saw this a few years ago, because I had this plan, because I was writing a giallo film that I was going to, you know, watch everything in order to know what to do and what not to do and be different, because there's a very simple formula with giallo that everybody likes to follow, which is fun in a sense, but it also kind of gets tiresome. I think with this film in particular, it really tries to be different because, I mean, this is Martino's fourth giallo film, and he already had a big, kind of a bigger success with The Strange Vice of Miss Ward, which is, you know, kind of a play on words with this title because it was Vice again. But he really tried to make it very character-driven and kind of a little maybe too highly sexual because, I mean, our giallo films are usually sexual, of course, because they involve sex and murder and mystery. But this one seemed to do it a little bit more over the top. And you kind of get lost in this world of the sexuality and possessiveness. And you don't really realize you're watching a giallo film until, like, you know, 30 minutes in when the black glove killer shows up.
Yeah.
So I always thought that was kind of unique, kind of pacing the story, because once that happens, then it dives back into more characterization, heavy on dialogue, and doesn't really talk about the mystery and the murders too much in the very beginning, and then jumps back to the more killing. And it's not as brutal as a lot of other giallo films that I've seen. It's the really stuff that's shocking is kind of the relationship, with the characters and being so possessive and kind of this huge sexual drive that the film has. I think that is more, unsettling than the actual, murders. And everything like that. And I also, you know, with style, Martino knows how to shoot a film. He knows what to capture and how to capture it. And using background, foreground, colors in order to help tell his story, which I've always really enjoyed. He's a hell of a filmmaker. He can use brutality in such a way that it's beautiful, where it's not, it hits you super hard to where, you know, you have upset stomach or you get sick or, you know, it's the gore scene for gore's sake or something like that. Like everything from Blade of the Ripper to, the Scorpion's Tale, what the fuck is the name of the movie? Scorpion's Tale movie. You know, and then also he did Torso, Sex with a Smile, stuff like that. Like, it has these tendencies to be beautiful using the gore and the brutality rather than, you know, kind of a, you know, you have Lucio Fulci with, you know, we're going to be talking about The Black Cat soon, where it's overly gory and the scenes go on for so long with a cat scratching somebody, it just like keeps scratching and scratching and scratching and scratching. When, you know, your Vice uses a little of that. And I don't know, it's just not the main focus. And I've always liked that with his films in particular, because I think he just does a good job.
You know, the cat is just a piece of the story. It's kind of weaves in and out at certain moments. Its name is Satan, so you know something's up.
Yeah.
With that cat. But
which I think is, it's a unique pairing with the both of these films, because I actually didn't realize it until it was packaged like that. Cause I was thinking about the cat. But I never really put the two and two together. Cause I guess I never picked it up on the credits. in the film, because I've seen the movie, I don't know, maybe about two or three times. I just didn't pick it up until this box that was released. I was like, oh shit, duh, you know. So it uses little similarities. It's very loosely based. I mean, obviously the Black Cat, Fulci, is more driven to that Poe story versus what this is. This just uses a couple elements from what I, for me at least.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I'm such an idiot. I should have read, they actually have the Black Cat story in the box set here. And
yeah, it's the booklet.
Kicking myself for not reading it.
Oh, Sean.
Don't you don't know how to read anyway. It's okay.
I know. Who has time to read?
So, I don't know. I think for Giallo fans that actually like stories, and because we have, there's a tendency for the Giallo films to be very misogynistic and very brutal and hateful towards women. It's a very common thing. I don't necessarily don't think the filmmakers were trying to really do that, be misogynistic back then, but from watching it now, going back, some of those films can just be a little like, oh wow, this is another one where you just, you know, tear apart women. Like, there's no story. We don't, you know, it's very red. The music's very heavy, and someone's breathing very, very, very heavily in a mask, sparkling gloves. With this, I think it takes that toll of more trying to be what, you know, Argento was doing with Giallo, making it very, you know, basing it more off cinematography and camera tricks and being more beautiful while staying true to that formula that, you know, obviously those books created in, the 50s and 60s. Translating that into using that suspense with the story, but using your surroundings in order to keep it suspenseful rather than basing it off brutality. So I think this is definitely one of the films it's not as exciting as a lot of Giallo films, but I think it's one of the more well-made ones. So
that's where I completely agree with you, is that it is an extremely well-made film. I like the risks. I don't want to call it a risk, but the differences that they take in comparison to, you know, what we would expect from a Giallo film makes it interesting. But as a piece of cinema, like non-comparative to other Giallo films, and I think that's what it is. I mean, if you pull it out of the genre of Giallo films, it's nothing really special. But when you line it up against, you know, kind of the carbon copies that a lot of Giallo films have become, it does stand out. And for that, it's definitely worth a watch. I just think The Black Cat's better. That's just me.
Well, I think another thing that Martino did a lot with his Giallo films, because he made quite a few, is that he wanted to kind of be all over the place with his Giallo films. He made stuff like this, and then he got brutal, like with stuff with like Torso and
Torso's my favorite of his personally.
What is that other movie that he did? The Violent Professionals is the other one that he did that. It gets to the tendency where it's like, we want to be more brutal. We want to focus on this. So I think it's pretty ambitious, is when you take a genre that you're comfortable with, but you do it differently, and you kind of want to do what everybody else is doing, and also you want to make a film that's not like anything else that it's out there. So yeah. I don't know, a lot of fun.
I had a lot of fun with it. I mean, just because it's just different than what I was expecting it to be. And I saw the Giallo elements, but I appreciated that it went beyond the Giallo, and there was some psychological stuff between the women. You know, you didn't really know, and none of the characters, like, you kind of think you know Javier, everyone pegged, but he did a really good job with the characterization, where you kind of do feel sympathy for each of the characters in a way, but also you're kind of looking at each of them sideways, like, you know, trying to kind of pinpoint who the killer is, because he does such a good job of kind of setting up where in any of these characters potentially could be, you know, committing these murders, you know. And then the cat's just fucking around with everybody. But
Brad, you might know this. When did this one come out compared to
this came out in this all
the colors, like, of the dark. 70s.
This is his movie. This is after. This is his fourth
okay,
movie.
Okay, so this is after.
All Colors of the Dark later. is his third.
Is it third? Okay, cool.
Yeah, I think it was his third Giallo film. And then he did Torso okay. after this.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, that
yeah,
makes
it was,
sense.
It was
okay.
The Case of the Scorpion's Tail, and then all the Colors of the
Case
Dark.
Case of the Scorpion's Tail.
And
that's
then Your
what
Vice
was.
Is the Locked Room, and then Torso are the kind of the.
Because he did the Scorpion with two tails later on, which is pretty cool.
Oh.
He also did After the Fall of New York.
Hell yes.
Which is really great. And Hands of Steel, which is one of his better. He did action really, really well later on. Because, I mean, it's kind of funny to watch him go about making Giallo films, and then he got into kind of more action, and then he did, you know, Sex with a Smile, which is a, you know, kind of a comedy, and then he did a Western movie that Blue Underground released, and I can't think of the name of it.
Cool.
But anyways, I don't know, very diverse filmmaker. He's definitely one of the best. He's not a corny filmmaker either.
Right.
Not
at all.
His later years, I should take that back. In the 80s, like Fall of New York and Hands of Steel, I think he's starting to fall off his rocker a little bit, just mainly because he probably wanted to have fun. But his first, like, 20 years into cinema, he didn't have that corny Italian-type thing, you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Like, Fulci's
oh, shit,
a great
he did
film.
Screamers.
Yeah, that, and he did
oh, I
the
hated
Fish
that.
Man movie.
I hated that movie.
Yeah. I knew you were going to say that. but, you know, there's always those corny tendencies, and it's one of those things where, you know, it's probably lost in translation. That's why it's kind of funny to us in situations. We also have the dubbing aspect that makes it, you know, kind of corny and weird. But he's always one to kind of, you know, steer away from how that all came about and operated. Like, yeah. I don't know. It's very more straightforward and doesn't like, that's what I'm saying. He doesn't do the gore for gore's sake. So he doesn't have, like, you know, a woman running and then there's a shot that's a, you know, a long shot. And then just a doll explodes or something like that. Just that off the, where you just giggle because it's so obvious that, you know, this is the gore scene. This is the big thing. He doesn't really do that, which I've always really liked.
Yeah.
You know, and one thing we can talk about the black cat, because that happens quite frequently.
Yeah.
It happens all the time in Fulci movies.
Yeah. Well, let's jump into the black cat in just a second. But I want to go through the disc briefly, because there's some interviews in here, which were mostly kind of dry, just listening to him talk about his career and Sergio, listen to him talk about his career and everything, which
he's still alive.
I don't know. I think so. It's a brand new interview with Sergio Martino. It's just great. He's so casual and relaxed, just talking about his career. And
I don't know.
He talks a lot about Edwidge, and all the stuff that he did, you know, with her as far as film goes and everything. And
well, yeah, she's his muse for
for
the most part.
She was. He says she was his brother's partner, basically. If you know what I'm saying. And but then his brother passed away, and she became more of kind of like a sister to him. So he just, it's really cool. They have a really cool relationship, and he definitely,
I'd hope so, given
well, yeah. But there's also like, I tweeted this out earlier, like Eli Roth seems to show up in everything these days, especially with Italian cinema.
Right?
So there's
What's
a friggin' interview or with Eli Roth.
I don't care for Eli Roth that much, but he's pretty fucking knowledgeable.
Well, no, it's great. That's what I'm saying. Like, it's great hearing him talk about these films.
He
knows so much about these films, but it's like, dude, why don't you create better films with all this knowledge you have?
Yeah, that's the one thing I'll never take away from him, as much as, like, I'll shit on him all day. But dude's smart, and he knows his shit. Yeah. He really knows his shit.
I'll listen to him talk Italian cinema
all day long. Yeah, can they just make him Can that just be his thing? Like, Eli Roth, stop making movies. Just be the Italian talk cinema. About them.
Yeah. He just does moderation.
Italian cinema film historian.
Like, yeah. You know that old saying, if you can't do, teach? I think he's the perfect example
totally.
Of that.
Because he all of a sudden brings up Hostel 2 during the interview, and I was like, oh.
Oh, he's throw like, up.
Because that's what I was trying to do with Hostel 2, that was my homage to Italian.
Yeah.
Good news. Yeah. No.
Well, plus, Edwidge Finch is in Hostel 2.
Exactly. He mentions that,
yeah.
too.
Yeah.
Anyway, let's jump into some Fulci, and let's talk about the Black Cat.
Well, I was just going to say, on this... they did a negative scan of this film, so it looks really fucking good.
Yes, both of these films are brand new 2K scans.
And I think that's a big thing to say with Giallo films, because it's one thing that I always look for is, because they are beautiful films. So this truly does look really good, and it's well worth the price, just for this movie alone and the packaging. So let's get to Black Cat.
We already did. You missed it, man.
We're already there. We're there.
Okay. Fucking with you. All right. Black Cat, Lucio Fulci. And I had never seen, I've seen the main Fulcis. This is one that I have not seen. And I was surprised that this one wasn't as head explodey and gooey.
It doesn't feel like a Fulci film. We'll just put it that way.
Yeah, not at all.
Right.
There's a couple things like when the bed is shaking up in the air. And, the cat scratching the face up close, then it feels like a Fulci film.
Yeah.
But everything else is just kind of off the rocker, does not feel like his vision.
Yeah. Did you know that the bed shaking was the idea of the producer? The producer wanted him to put an exorcist-type scene in the movie, and he begrudgingly did.
Well, because it feels like, it feels like Manhattan Baby-type shit when it happens. So, yeah, it's just a bizarre film. I mean, I saw it, Blue Underground, I think, released it on DVD, back in the day, and I first saw it when I was working in a video store, and it came out on DVD. I picked it up because I was, on a Fulci kick, so I wanted to see everything he did. And I watched it, and I was actually kind of disappointed, when I first saw it, so I haven't revisited until recently, last week or so. But yeah, I still feel the same way about it. I think I respect it a little bit more in a sense because I've grown since I've last seen it. But, I just feel like this to me feels dry.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like it drags for quite a bit.
He needs to stop zooming in on people's eyes.
Well, he needs to keep doing that. Yeah, no, that's his signature. That's how you know it's a Fulci film.
I know.
There's certain things about his films that, his trademarks or whatever. But, I mean, there's certain aspects that I really, really did. I like the sequence when she's laying in bed and she sees the yellow eyes.
Oh, yeah.
I thought that was really, really well done. I really enjoyed that. I enjoyed some of the cat attacks. I enjoyed seeing, Fulci actors that he uses frequently pop up here and there, like, randomly. Is the lead guy the dude from, it's David Warbeck. He's from fucking Clockwork Orange, right? Is this the same guy? I didn't look it up.
I'm really bad at this game, so I'm useless.
David Warbeck. I mean, he's been in, a lot of films here and there, but, I think he's a very sinister looking. I think he's a great actor.
He's got that furrowed brow in The Beyond.
No, you know what? No, David Warbeck is the fucking. He's not the hairy guy. Who's the hairy guy?
Well, he has freaking unibrow for days.
Yeah.
That is there.
It's not a unibrow. He just furrows it a lot. Like he's constantly like half thinking and half constipated.
I don't know. One of these guys in one of these movies. I could be getting my lead actors.
The guy that plays the lead
one of the guys
fucking played. We just talked about the fucking strange case of Dr. Jekyll, Miss Osborne. He's in that. He's in fucking Clockwork Orange.
Patrick McGee.
Patrick McGee. That's it. He's the one. Yes. That's that's the creepy looking guy. Not David Warbeck. David Warbeck's the fucking cop.
Right. Right?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Jesus Christ. I got so confused.
Yeah. I had no idea what was going on.
Yeah. This is where I fucking need IMDb, Sean. Bring it up on my computer. Bring it back.
I got it up now. Bring here. So yeah, Clockwork Orange.
Yeah, he's in like Barry Lyndon and stuff like that. What?
No, never mind. Just
I was saying, bring it bait. Bring it
okay.
Bait.
Okay, I thought you were just calling him your bae. And I was
calling me bae?
I was like, what just happened?
Fucking Sean is my bae. Like, what are you talking about? If you want to get into that.
Gross.
He has the furrowed brow. The other actor in Your Vice is a Locked Room, Luigi Pistilli, that dude, unibrow. Sorry.
Luigi Pistilli? That's the fucking dude from...
Was it bothering you that much that you couldn't figure out which one had the unibrow?
Bay of Blood. Well, no, I got confused.
This is where HD is like, oh, man, you know.
Because this is one of Fulci's more Americanized films. And I think that's in part of the situation why it doesn't feel so much like a Fulci film. Like it
right,
feels like it was more made for American audiences. But I don't know. It's just weird. And one thing I did notice, I wanted to point out, and I wanted to tweet to Ted Gagan from We Are Still Here, is that I didn't even pick up that the last name Dagmar that he uses in his film is the girl that plays Lillian. It's her first name, Dagmar. I guarantee you, that's where he got it from.
Of course.
Yeah, and I was like, oh shit. Using those homages bastard. In, you know, fucking clever ways.
So BJ, you are a fan of The Black Cat more than Your Vice is a Locked Room.
Correct.
What do you love about this film?
The Black Cat, to me, kind of exemplifies the Americanized Italian film in the sense that it's, like, really right on the cusp of melodrama. But it's not quite there, whereas, like really, really, like, Italian films are always very melodramatic, and I love it, and it just is ridiculous. The more Americanized-feeling Italian films are, like, melodrama light, so it's just enough where you're enjoying it and you're kind of able to have fun with it, but at the same time, like, it's trying so hard to be a serious film that you're going to take serious. And I can't, so I have even more fun because I can't take, I can't give them what they want me to give them. Like the bed scene is a perfect example. So like the bed scene is ridiculous, but it's fun, but at the same time it's creepy and I don't know. I really, really like it. I'm more of an Argento than I am a Fulci. That's just always been my thing, but this is the movie that kind of makes me want to rewatch all of Fulci stuff.
But when you watch it, you're like, what the fuck? Where did this come from?
Right, because like it
feels like he didn't want to do the movie.
It's a little bit more coherent than a lot of his other work. Yeah. But that's not saying much.
It is. It wraps around like all the scene. Most of the scenes that happen for a reason. But right. it feels like a really dumb. It feels like a fan film of a fucking Fulci movie.
What I read and what I got from the special features was that he did this really quickly in between City of the Living Dead and The Beyond.
Boom. Yeah,
so
that's the reason why
I don't know. And I think
that's why it's lame.
Sounds like it was like
he
a
was
studio
saving the
mandated
good shit for those.
Right, it was like a studio mandated type of contractual.
But that's
obligation.
The reason again. This just solidifies the reason why it doesn't fucking feel like a Fulci film at all.
Mm-hmm.
Like there's just his signature trademarks is the only thing that carries over. Like the stuff with the eyes, the slow moving, some of the action sequences, the mm-hmm. gore, like those are the only things that really care. And plus the actors,
I was expecting it to be more, a little more gory. Even the cat, the cat attack. I mean, this cat is a motherfucker.
Yeah,
this cat gives no fucks. This is the perfect representation of a fucking cat.
Yeah, this cat has no fucks to give.
This is real life.
Yeah.
Like, those fucking cats I put on my Instagram, my Feral Thug River cats, I think they are descendants of the black cat in this movie.
They could
be. The cat has picked up on my hatred. Like, what?
So it's-
no!
Where he, I mean, both these movies go, from what I know, go divert from the Edgar Allan Poe story quite a bit. This one, I guess in the story, the person was more of a monster. And this one, Fulci makes the cat the monster and kind of the cat's the murderer, pretty much, in this film.
Yeah, and also
it's no spoiler.
Supernatural.
Yeah.
Yes. It plays with the, I don't know. I don't want to call it the superstition because it's not a superstition film. It's
no, but it plays with that superstition though.
Yes, but it's, yeah, but it's not a superstition film.
Right.
And
right,
I think that that's important.
It
to
uses
differentiate.
Elements of that, I guess you would say.
And what's different is like where the last one we talked with, this fucking name, Your Vice's Locked Room is more of a mystery. This has mysterious elements to it but you're never mysterious about what this cat is. The cat is an agent of evil, to the extent.
This cat's a dick and he's gonna ruin everything.
To the extent of why the cat is singling out these people, that's the mystery. And that's pretty much it, you know, I mean, I think, I was expecting, I guess, more of a mysterious element from this film because I just got done watching the other one and I didn't get that. But still, like, so this one did fall flat for me, and because there's so many things where I feel like if it was going to be a Fulci movie, it could have gone a little more batshit, a little more crazy. Like,
that's not insane. I think this is definitely a very Americanized and very producer heavy.
Yeah,
this is a lot more tame. You can it feels very restrained for Fulci, which I guess is also why I like it because I, as much as it's fun to watch him
I completely agree with you. As much as I love Fulci, I completely agree with what you're about.
Yeah, because that shit gets exhausting.
No, it does.
And it's like,
it does.
Oh my god, like you, because you just, it's, it pushes and pulls so fucking much in his filmography, but The Black Cat, like, it's a little bit more subdued. So, like, you're getting just enough of that wackadoo, but at the same time, it's, you can follow it. I guess is really what it comes down to. Like, you can follow it. Like, yeah, there's not as much mystery as far as the cat, but because that mystery is taken away, I never once am like, all right, what the fuck is happening? Like, I know what's going on at all times. And that's a relief for his filmography, and I think that's why I like it so much.
Yeah, because he has very few movies like that to where they're low-key. Because, I mean, I think Zombie is always one that people forget. Like, it's a very low-key
film, I think, and that's probably why it's his most well-known and beloved, arguably,
right.
Is because of that.
And his other film that a lot of people love, but it just doesn't, it's not very well-known, is For the Apocalypse, the serial killer Western movie. It's really fucking good.
I don't think I've seen that one.
Yeah, it's like four bounty hunters are being tracked by a fucking killer. It's really fucking good. But yeah, I mean, it's more or less just, you know, it's very toned down from, you know, stuff like, you know, maybe House by the Cemetery is not a very good example, but,
that one's a little.
I mean, it has its moments, but like shit like Murder Rock and fucking, you know, House of Clocks and the fucking Beyond.
Yeah.
You know, as much as I love those movies, like, you wouldn't be able to sit down and watch, like, a bunch of Fulci movies in a day.
Yeah,
because
you would
be fucking tired after movies.
I don't think I'd be able to.
I love him. He's a huge inspiration of mine, and I fucking love his films, and I think he's a great filmmaker. He's got a hell of an eye. But that's that lost in translation aspect to Italian cinema, is that sometimes it's like, do you understand what you're doing? Because I don't. You know, I'm not picking up, like, I watched Manhattan Baby like 10 times. I still don't know the fuck I'm watching. I've tried to analyze that movie, like sitting down, watching 15 minutes a piece and writing about it, and I can't.
Because you know? Stop in that 15 minutes and then you don't remember what happened in the 15 minutes before.
Yeah.
Whenever we bring up Fulci now, I always wonder, and I looked this up earlier, like when the hell are we going to get Murder Rock released again? Because it's on an out of print DVD right now.
But that's another one of those movies that, you know, it is so, like, you're like, oh man, Murder Rock's going to be so good. And then you watch it and you're like, what are you doing? Like, like, you're just, he's doing what he wants. And that's the cool thing about filmmaking and for him. But at the same time, it's like some of his really, like, House of Clocks is a really fucking cool idea. But it gets lost in Fulci's brain and gets scrambled egg type brain. And then it pours out of his mouth. And it's like, I can't imagine being an actor, so like an American actor on set during this.
Could you imagine getting direction during that? Like, wait, what are we doing?
In The Black Cat with Patrick, what's his last name?
McGee.
That scene where he like hyperventilates when he has the ring, that's so Fulci. I can't imagine like him telling Patrick to actually do that, because that scene completely takes you out of the actual scene and you're like, what the fuck is happening?
Do you guys think Fulci operates better when he's under the thumb of a producer than when he's more restrained?
I don't know. I mean, this is the only film where I would really say it's very producer heavy.
Okay.
But this is my least favorite Fulci film I'm not saying the movie's bad by any means, but out of everything, this is the least rewatchable. Like, I would rewatch Manhattan Baby again before this.
Really?
And that movie doesn't make any sense to me.
I wouldn't say that he's a better filmmaker when it's more producer heavy, but I think that, you know, this is a good example of why producers exist, because, you know, as much as, you know, Fulci is a very brilliant mind, he can, when he has all, like, the all-knowing power of his art, it can be crazy. And for an art piece, that's wonderful and that's brilliant. To make money as a business effort, not necessarily the best idea. So I think that it's very weird to see those two worlds and, like, you know, look at something like a Manhattan Baby, which very much is fucking off the wall and not necessarily accessible, and then compare it to something like The Black Cat, which is a little bit more accessible, and you see, like, oh, this is why producers exist, because they're trying to make you your money back and they're reining your crazy ass in, which, you know, is that a good thing? I don't know. I mean, is that a bad thing? Maybe. But, you know, either way, now he has this very varied and different installment into his filmography and shows that he can do something other than be fucking crazy Fulci.
Yeah. I think these both these movies in this set complement each other well. I think if they're put out on their own, I don't think I'm glad that Arrow decided to put these two together.
Yeah, I think it's a great double feature because they share enough similarities. I mean, obviously the source material, but they share enough of those kind of gel elements, but they're still very, very different. So you don't feel like you're watching, you know, 4 hours of the same movie. Like, you're definitely getting two sides of the palette.
Well, that's what I was worried about. I was worried I was going to be seeing the same, pretty much the same story twice. And they're both done in such a way that, where the first one definitely is more of a giallo mystery, a whodunit, and whereas the Black Cat is more of a supernatural cat slasher movie. I don't know.
Can that be a thing? Can, like, we invent that subgenre here and now? Like, cat slasher films.
Yeah, I mean, I'm trying to remember, like, who's the actress in The Black Cat? I feel like she isn't given enough to do. She kind of, I guess, brings the story along, but I mean, out of the actresses, you know, I mean.
I cannot think of her last name. I know her first name is Mimsy, and I only know that because it's impossible to forget that fucking first name.
I mean, she's okay, but she, I mean, I feel like, you know, her role is pretty, just tying everything together. Am I wrong in that assessment?
No,
of that?
You're not wrong.
Mimsy Farmer.
That's Mimsy it, Mimsy Farmer.
Mimsy fucking Farmer.
I just want that to be my job title. What are you? I'm a Mimsy Farmer. What do you do? Farm Mimsies.
But
that would be fun.
This set is great. I think I got it on sale, so I was pretty happy.
Oh, wow. Fucking hats off to fucking Alfred.
What? It was $39.99 on Amazon when I grabbed it. It's up
You're
to like
fucking welcome.
It's up to four. Thanks, Brad. You let me know about it. Jerk. I was trying not to spend any money, and then Brad texts me about this.
Dude, it's only fucking $40, and that's like a normal price of a fucking Arrow release.
Yeah, like, I mean, well, that's the thing. I was like, well, I better grab this.
Yeah, fucking $40 for a kick-ass box set like that, and like two decent movies. Yeah.
I'm trying to see how much it is over at Grindhouse Video.
$100 fucking dollars.
It's $49.95 at Grindhouse over at grindhousevideo.com.
Boom.
So not bad.
Screencast 10.
Screencast 10. You get you save 10%, and you're helping out a awesome website and a local business.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Also,
keeping them live so I can keep going there.
While we're plugging shit. A great companion to the Black Cat set would be Coffee Shop of Horrors Nevermore.
Oh my god,
coffee,
you are
Nevermore Amaretto.
Oh wait, you're right. I will give you that.
I talked about it last week, but I was like, I should have saved it for this week. But this is amaretto as fuck.
Yeah.
Like, you smell it, it smells like amaretto, you brew it. Holy moly. Amaretto in your mouth.
I need it.
Anyway, those are our plugs. CoffeeShopOfHorrors.com. Yeah. Use the code SCREAMCAST.
And plus, Black Cats is limited as
it is.
Well. So I know that Arrow released like the percentages of what they have left of films, and this is one of the lower ones. So
You
might want to pick it up because Arrow does, once they're out, they're out. They don't like find some secret stock later
right.
on and be like, hey, we have a... Five, for some reason, we have 500 more copies.
Yeah, if they sell well, like the Hellraiser, one, they'll release like standalone versions. But this is one that I doubt that they're going to reprint. They'll let it sell out and be done.
Yeah, I mean,
with
they
it.
Might release them by themselves, but you know, the films. By
I mean, they
themselves,
haven't released.
But...
They never re-released Hell Comes to Frogtown, and that. Ugh,
yeah, but
so
that was
bummed.
A limited edition Blu-ray.
I know.
They also did that with Hellgate. They released Hellgate as well.
So
as
sad.
I have Hell Comes to Frogtown. I'm cool.
You're a jerk.
I don't own it, no. But I don't think you're a jerk.
It's one of my favorite movies of all time. I really hope somebody brings Hell Comes to Frogtown Blu-ray here in the States. It better happen.
I hope so, too, so you can shut the fuck up about
Sorry. Until then, I do have the DVD, and that's fine. But what a great!
You have
flick.
All the sequels because there's like
no,
10
I don't.
Sequels.
I almost we were talking about one day, and I almost bought them, but I saved.
They're
my
really
money.
Awful. I'm glad you didn't do that.
Yeah. All right. So that's the Arrow box set, the Black Cats set. It comes, I believe, it comes highly recommended. I think you have a lot of mileage with these two films together. The book is great. And there's plenty of special features to go around on this thing, and the films look great. So definitely
apparently 20th Century Fox owns Hell Comes to Frogtown.
Okay.
So good fucking luck.
And they're sitting on Looks The like Abyss and True Lies. God damn it. What the hell? All right.
Actually, wait, when did Hell Comes to Frogtown come out?
Like what year? Or the Blu-ray? Yeah.
No, what year did the movie come out?
80-something.
Well, it was between 88, then actually Anchor Bay and Image own it.
Fuck. Never mind then. It's never coming out.
Nope.
Arrow, so, your only hope. Re-release that shit in the UK. Come on.
Yeah, Image doesn't release movies like old movies anymore, so they got shit on so much. Anchor Bay might do it. Not.
In conjunction with Scream Factory?
I don't know if Anchor Bay associates with Scream Factory, do they?
They did with the Halloween set. That was a one-time deal.
That was the only thing.
Damn yeah, it. I think that's like a very, very special and their side of the deal, situation.
Didn't do yeah. much. All right, moving along.
So, moving along to...
Let's jump into our Scream...
La Bamba!
Our stream screams.
Nate, wake up!
There's something very important I forgot to tell you.
Don't fucking scream at me!
Scream, I'll break your neck. Don't scream, miss. Don't scream.
Wow, you said it without, like, a fucking problem.
I'm getting better.
Man, you're getting so good.
We are talking Route 666.
Route
666.
Jesus Christ.
Route 666.
I say Route.
Route. It is.
I'm kidding. I'm just fucking with you.
Route 66. Route 666.
But if it's Route 66, I say it like, I don't know. I think maybe it's just pop culture.
It's just weird, you know. I had a weird feeling ever since we got out here.
I have been traveling these back roads for weeks now. You know, no map's gonna help you here, Dad.
This road is closed. This road is off limits to everyone.
Open fire, boys!
I'm partaking all these old back roads, Jack, just not this one. This one is cursed.
Something's not right.
Where's Nick?
Wait, you didn't see him in the car?
No.
I'm going down there.
What the hell are those things?
There's a new marshal in town.
Y'all gotta go down there to Route 66.
Oh, God. You should just do your pass up face.
That one with the extra six in there. That's trouble.
Oh, God.
It's the highway of the beast.
Route 666. This came out in 2001. It is available in HD through Voodoo.com for $7.99. Bargain.
And it's so fucking worth it.
How it's you so feel about it may vary, but
all right.
This is directed by William Wesley, starring Lou Diamond Phillips and Lori Petty.
All right, so
I wish I had been drunk to watch it. That's my review.
This is the second and last movie from William Wesley. He did Scarecrows, which we covered.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
With Book Walter. All right, so this is how I feel about Route 666. Is that if this movie was made 15 years before 2001, it would have been so kick-ass. Because I like it feels like it is a scare, like it's Scarecrows again.
Dude, it totally feels like at least a 90s movie. Yeah, early 90s.
That's what I'm saying. Like I feel that it has, I think being it was in 2001.
Oh, yeah.
And being that new wave of horror, I think it hurt it. To the point, if this movie was made in the fucking early 90s, late 80s, it would have been fucking awesome. But I think the modernization of horror in 2000, it happened in 98. That's when horror changed, in 1998. I swear to fucking God, that's the year that I was like, wow, we're really taking a different turn here. And up to about 2003... this, 5-year span where it became very MTV-ish.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how this movie is. Like, every fucking time the zombies show up,
yes, that's the
we
one
drop
thing I
frames.
Hate about it.
And I'm like,
God damn it.
Why are you doing that? That's a very, very poor choice to
yes.
do.
That's my one major criticism of the film,
but
is that dropping
I
the
think,
frames for the zombies.
But
or whatever
I think,
they are.
if it came zombies. Ghouls. If they came out if this came out prior, like before 98 even, it would have been a lot different. Cinematography wise, also
it wouldn't look so clean.
Yeah, they took away a lot of like the cool gore that they could. I mean, they have a fucking jackhammer that they're plugging into people, but all you see is blood spurt on your face. Like the one guy, the very first guy that they catch, the one cop, when they walk away from his body is obliterated on the ground, but they never show it getting to that part.
Do you think it got cut?
Well, I think MPAA? Well, no, I just don't think they filmed it.
Hmm.
Yeah, I don't think they did either.
You know, so, because I think it's one of those things where they, you know, they weren't going to go that small budget, limited budget with a film like this. I that's the reason why I'm so like partial to it, because I feel that it would have been one of those fucking movies that we talk about and love from the 80s or early 90s. Yeah. That's what it feels like. There's so much potential, but I think it missed its year. I think if this film went in production in the fucking late 80s and William Wesley had the hardest fucking time getting this off the ground, and finally he met some people in 2000 to produce it, and they made it in 2000, released in 2001, and the time just passed.
Yeah.
Because well, look at the fucking script of this movie.
I was just about to say that.
This script is pure 80s cheese.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Fucking Stephen Williams is like the best character actor and so fucking funny in horror films. I mean, he's the one of the reasons why I like Jason Goes to Hell, you know. But he is just so fucking funny and such a great companion to somebody as unfunny as Lou Diamond Phillips. And
he's not that bad.
He's not that bad, but
he's charming.
He's charming, but he's
trying.
But yeah, I think that material was more or less written for like a, you know, like a Napoleon Wilson, you know, Carpenter or Snake Plissken role, rather, yeah, you know, actor that can,
and they got
that can play that good guy bad guy vibe, and Lou Diamond Phillips plays an amped up cop.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's how he portrayed it, and that's why I didn't really care for him. And then Lori Petty, who is kind of the wisecracker, you know, she was a miscast.
Oh, absolutely.
You know,
I mean,
like,
I'm pretty ride or die for her, but
she's very dull in this movie, and I think maybe if they put a no name in there, it probably would have worked out a little bit better. But putting a good actor in that role and not giving them the screen time.
She's not really given much to do. Is
right.
The thing.
I think
she's just kind of
you're
there.
Waiting. And I think that takes you out of a film. Like if you're going to cast, I mean,
this is Tate Girl we're talking about here.
Yeah. But I mean, if
yeah,
you cast
exactly.
somebody such as Lori Petty in, and you know, and this is still, she's still in her prime. I mm-hmm. mean, she was coming off the '90s. She's still well known. She's still well liked. And you put her in that movie, you're waiting for something for her to do more, and I think that takes you out of the film itself because you're waiting for something like that. You shouldn't have to wait. It should just be there. Because when it first starts with, you know, the bar sequence, and then it goes with them, handcuffing him in the bathroom. And then
Stephen
it goes
Williams'
out of the
character?
Bathroom. He's fucking Stephen Williams is fucking great.
Rabbit.
The film feels very, very ADD in the way that it's – I don't know if it's just like the way that it was edited or the way that it was shot. I think you kind of nailed it when you said like the kind of the MTV-ification of it.
Yeah,
it feels like they had so many great ideas and then they just jumped around because they were trying to keep your attention, so they just would change things. And I think it's
a total miscast because even Dale Midkiff, which is funny that we talk about like two Dale Midkiffs films on the podcast. We talked about Nightmare Weekend, and he was in that. But
that's right.
Dale Midkiff is in this, and his character is very funny, like dialogue funny, but he cannot portray that role very well. He's not a funny guy. You know, and that's mm-hmm. the one thing I think that hurts this movie more than anything. And I think that's the reason why. Also, it's not horrible, is because of Stephen Williams.
What do you think?
We're selling this movie that well.
What if this was shot back in 1991 and Lou Diamond Phillips had his mullet still? Would he?
Oh, that would have been
1991 Lou Diamond Phillips, do you think he'd pull it off?
91 Lou Diamond Phillips would have been better, because that's when he was like, okay, I'd say anywhere between 91 and 98
mm-hmm.
Lou Diamond Phillips, because that's when he was in horror films. You know, he was doing, you know, he was coming off the first Power. He was in, you know, that vampire movie where he has to break their backs is how you kill people.
Which one's that?
I don't know. I can't remember the name of it, but fucking Vince Madurko's in that movie.
I think he wouldn't have been afraid to have, you know, kind of fun with it.
Bats.
Yeah,
Bats.
He plays a great. God, he's right. Awesome in Bats. he's the reason why I like Bats.
I think 2001. You know, he was at the point in his career where he was trying to, you know, maybe be somewhat more legitimate than something like Bats. So I think if this would have came out in 91, he would have been kind of still in his fuck it mode, and like he would have had more fun with it, and then we would have had more fun by proxy. But I think 2001, he's like, I'm gonna play this kind of hard nose. You're like, no, don't do that. You don't have to do that. It's way more fun to not do that. I don't know. I have like this weird love hate relationship with like the horror that came out in the early 2000s. Because for the most part, that was the stuff that I was seeing new, like right when I got into horror. Like the stuff that you would just pull off of like the shelf at Blockbuster because it was there, but like that's when I was discovering things. Mm-hmm. And it's not necessary. It was not a good time.
Not a good decade to be discovering.
Horror. Exactly. Like you guys got to, you know, grow up and like watch Freddy as kids. Like I got Route 666. So
it's
you're lucky. You're so
it's
lucky.
All right. Like it's okay. I think it's a good one timer if you have some alcohol.
It's definitely like a fun movie that you watch with a group. It's definitely not something I'm ever going
to
you know, really chase down to watch again. But I also do like how there's, I don't know if you can hear me. Can you hear me?
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay. I like how there's a weird subgenre of horror films that are like open road horror films. Like that was a thing in the early 2000s. Like you had that.
Forsaken, one of the best fucking vampire movies ever made.
Stuff like that.
It says all the time.
Joyride, you have Monster Man, like you have all of these.
Yeah.
Like open road horror film.
Route 666 started it all. Fucking revolutionized horror.
And as much as like I hate to mention it because he's disgusting. Jeepers Creepers is also in that same kind of realm of like traveling down the road, and it's a horror film. So like, why was that a thing? Like, why did that become
totally a thing? Huh?
Because everybody saw Route 666 and they were like, yes, let's do this.
I'm pretty sure
they wanted to make sequels. You know, they could have made a franchise with fucking, you know,
especially
rabbit
with that
fucking
title. Yeah, like
yeah,
it could have
been 6666.
Like no U-turns. Like what? Get it?
Yeah,
that's a sequel title.
But I don't know. I think the movie is totally watchable, and all for the sequence whenever fucking rabbit poses as the marshal.
Yes. That's it. Yes.
And he sits down.
It's the best.
And he just sits there and he goes, who the fuck took my watch? But it's out of nowhere. It's like he never lost a watch. He never had a watch. He just sits down and says, who the fuck took my watch? Like, it's like, but I think that's like the 80s shit that's coming out. Like, Stephen Williams is so corny because Stephen Williams is the guy that did, if anybody remembers, like, you know, when X-Files was popular, we had all those, like, UFO abduction, like, miniseries or, like, special edition UFO miniseries things, like, at 9 o'clock tonight. He was the fucking narrator of those. you know, dressed in some fucking duster in the middle of the desert sand in Roswell, blah, blah, blah. He's the one that did that. He always did that shit. You know, he was like, he wanted to be that Unsolved Mysteries dude. But I think with what his background was and coming from, you know, because he's also a TV actor. He did a lot of TV. I think he's the only one that got it. Like, he knew how to do that role. Well, the sheriff, too. The sheriff's great. It's like, he reminds me of, like, a skinny Sid Haig. Like, hardcore. Just how he speaks and how he portrays himself. But I don't know. I think the characters are there. The script was there. It's just, it was executed at the wrong year and the wrong time. Yeah. And they got actors that they thought were popular or they could use to market the film maybe better. Right. And I think everything like that, it fell apart. Yeah. So,
with a title like Route 666, you had to market that better.
I know, man. I see the title and I'm like, I'm so in with this.
Yeah. I don't know. It's I think it has a ton of potential and it just wasn't executed well, but I still love the movie.
Well, it's on Vudu.com right now. Probably any streaming service, you can rent it or buy it for very cheap. So
$7.99.
Do it.
Let's move along to our VHS. Oh my god!
Wow, dude!
Ew! So, why do you say it like that?
I don't know. I grossed myself out.
Nikki.
Well, here we are at last. Right where we ought to be. Video.
Oh my god!
Yeah.
But yep. This is not a horror film, but this
it's
is...
It's amazing is what it is.
Valet Girls.
We help you, ladies?
Jeez, I think it's too late for that.
I'm terribly sorry, ladies, but this invitation is for next week.
We'll see you then, but you know, you should be leashed and collared by your master at all times. Deal.
I've been waiting for a long time now.
Fantastico!
Champagne?
Oh, no, thank you. I have something.
Then you won't mind if I do.
Not at all.
Ah! Hey, watch out! I won't kill you!
I'm developing a screenplay. I think you might be interested in. It's called Vigilante Nut.
Would you care for a tequila, man?
No, thank you.
Do you mind if I do? Can I just now you will be one of my phone number?
Not that you aren't a little hunk, dear, but you do park cars.
It's the story of the boy who ate the water bagel.
And I'm going to preface this by saying I was not able to see the full film.
You said that last time. You said that last show. So
here's the thing.
I don't even think you get a chance to even speak anymore.
You're fired.
I'm sorry. It was available on HD at one time. So somewhere there is an HD master of this somewhere. And it's just,
MGM owns it, I think.
No,
which means
Lionsgate.
It's never coming out.
Not Lionsgate.
Lionsgate doesn't own this.
Where the hell did I see that? Lionsgate or Anchor Bay?
It's WB or MGM. Because it is... Oh, wait, you might be right.
MGM. MGM.
Is it MGM? I'm just trying to look at my tape.
Well...
I can't
it's
see
kind
the
of
from here because it's in the V's.
I was trying to look. I was looking through some different things, and I thought I saw Lionsgate on one streaming site, like Vudu said, or Vudu it never came up there, but some site said Lionsgate. Amazon.com. When you look up in the movies, it says MGM. So
yeah, I'm pretty sure.
Well, here's a fun fact: it doesn't matter because we're talking about how cool the film is.
God, I've only
not
seen
who the
scenes.
Fuck owns it.
I've only seen a few scenes of this, so I'm going to let you guys go at it because I really want to see the full film.
So, number one, this is directed by Rafael Zelensky, who is one of the more notorious sex comedy directors who did Screwballs, Screwballs 2, Screwball Hotel, and the Screwball Trilogy, of course. Recruits, Spellcaster. It's not a sex comedy, there's something else. There's one other male, sex comedy did, I can't remember the name of it, other than Valley Girls. But it's weird because in the golden age of sex comedies, where it's all about TNA and guys trying to bang girls, we get a female perspective in a way of some struggling musicians that want to be something but don't like it's kind of unique. I think this is where BJ will be great to come in to get that kind of that female perspective of kind of females portrayed in sex comedies of how you have that in the movie. You have how females are usually portrayed in sex comedies, but then you have these girls, ballet girls, that do it a little bit differently. Almost to a, like, kind of a, I don't know, a sort of, like, feministic side to the whole ordeal. I mean, you'll have TNA, of course, but...
Oh, yeah. I was going to say, this... Because this is one that I had not seen, and I am so thankful that you brought it to my attention.
You're welcome. You're welcome.
Whoa. Because I've been starting to, you know, dive into the teen sex comedies of yesteryear, and I've been trying to track this one down, but I haven't known where to find it. Because I've heard this about how it's, you know, oh, it's kind of like gender swapped. So first of all, Valley Girls is everything that I love in life because it's a sex comedy and there's like original music in it. Cause like the one wants to be a rock star.
Mary D. Marshall's like, the lead who had a short lived career as a musician. No big deal.
Yes. I love that. And then, oh goodness. What's her name? Rosalind is, the voice of Wendy Testerberger on South Park. Like she's a voice actress now.
I did not know.
That's a fun fact. That being said, I was so game for it because it's, you know, cheesy and campy and, you know, there's music and there's like sex comedy, all that fun stuff. Yes, it's different in the sense that it's showing, you know, kind of from the eyes of girls of like, this is what it's like to be coming of age and finding yourself and discovering, you know, kind of like sexuality. But at the same time, it's definitely still, I mean, you'd kind of have to, given the time period it came from.
Right.
It's still being presented. Yeah, it's still being presented, you know, with the male gaze. Like all of the TNA that you see is still very much sexualized for male pleasure, necessarily for women. So in that regard, like it's close to being really progressive. Like it's interesting that it is kind of a flipped perspective, but the overall view of the film. It's the same as every other sex comedy. But that's okay. Right. I mean, there's still merit in that.
But they definitely did try to do something new.
Yes.
I mean, fucking Valley Girls is directed by, of course, what I said, Zelinsky, who did Screwballs, who the entire plot of Screwballs is just to see a girl naked. That's literally the plot of Screwballs, is just
it's
to
just see boobies.
Is just like literally that's it. That's all they talk about. That's the goal of the movie.
And then you see them and the movie ends.
Wow.
Yeah, it's really
like,
fucking
it's
great.
Like, here's her kiss, credits roll.
Oh, life before the internet.
Yeah. No, but it's great. But I mean, you also have that director doing Ballet Girls, so you're going to have that. But there is that sense of like, there's not. I mean, I'm pretty well diverse in sex comedies. I can't tell you one sex comedy that has this approach of having a female group, female, like, you know, leads trying to do something without using, you know, titties and stuff to get to where they want to go. Like, it's very toned down to, but around them, the other sex comedy movie is happening. But they kind of have their own in their own little world, which I always kind of dug. And I thought it was very unique, you know, and very ambitious in the sense of, like, you have these ballet girls, let's see them naked, but you're seeing everybody else naked. That type of thing.
Yeah, which I definitely appreciate. I mean, it's a lot of fun. One of the movies that it gets compared to a lot in like the same realm of a girls just want to have fun. It has that same yeah. spirit, but you know, a little bit more raunchy, which I agree with. I think that like your introduction into these sort of films could be girls just want to have fun. And then once you're a little bit more mature and you can kind of handle the adult content, then jump into something more like Valley Girls. But no, it's a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun. It's very bright too, which I love about kind of that whole sex comedy subgenre, is everything you watch is really bright and kind of brash, like just from set design, costume design, everything. So it just, it makes you feel good to watch it. Like everything about it makes you feel good. I mean, even the fact that it is, you know, all of those films do have like low-key misogyny in all of them, because you kind of yeah. have to. You don't feel gross about it.
Yeah. And this one has a huge one, because I mean, the guy that the Malibu parties happen as a complete fucking sleazebag.
Oh yeah, he's disgusting. He's not glorified for being a skeezbag. Like, he's a skeezbag, and you're meant to dislike
right.
him. Which yeah. a lot of times didn't happen. Like, you know, in a lot of the sex comedies, like the overly aggressive macho guys were the villains, but at the same time, even kind of the underdogs were shitty. I mean, look at them, like Revenge of the Nerds. Like, everyone's like, oh yeah, the nerds win. Like, he kind of takes advantage of her. Like, we always like rush over that fact. Like, that's misleading. That's technically in the court of law, that would have been right. But okay. But they're the nerds, so it's okay. It's like, no, this is not okay. And it's fucked up. but in this one, like the gross guy is meant to be gross, and that's a relief. That's a relief.
Yeah. All I know is the Ron scenes Jeremy's that I saw. Who, Ron Jeremy's in it?
Yeah.
Nice.
That tells you anything. So.
I only watched, there's a compilation of all the musical numbers on YouTube.
They're so good.
And
they're so good.
I watched that, and it's fantastic. Like, the music's like, I love 80s music, and the music's good.
No, the music's really great in this. I mean, you had Mary D. Marshall, who had three albums. And this was, you know, it's kind of sad, because this is one of her films that was, you know, kind of going to kickstart her career. But for whatever reason, I'm not sure, like, I wouldn't say that, you know, because the only other option is that maybe the female perspective and kind of, you know, gender role swap, like, that hurt the film.
Because absolutely. I mean, you have to think about when it came out. I mean, this is still a time period where, like, they were teaching in textbooks that the female orgasm wasn't a thing. I mean, so having, like, if a film like Valley Girls were to come out today, it would be very much like The To-Do List with Aubrey Plaza, where it is very, you know, kind of flipping the typical gender roles, but at the same time still appealing to the male gaze. But that movie still brought in audiences of both genders, because audiences today don't care. Like, if they want to see a sex comedy, it doesn't matter who's in it. It doesn't matter if it's, you know, Easy A or if it's American Pie. They're going to fucking see it. But in the 80s, like, that was still, like, that gender divide was still very, very strong. So guys weren't going to be caught dead going to see a film called Valley Girls because I'm not fucking queer. I'm not going to see that, because that's just, that's the world that people were in when it came out. And that's unfortunate. So I think that this is definitely one that, like, I'm for sure going to be like, hey, friends of mine, watch this. Like, still a little problematic, but holy shit, did you know it existed? Cause I didn't until now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I want to. I need to track it down, definitely, so I can watch it. This is one that eluded me on YouTube. The other ones I can always have been able to find. This one's eluded me, so I will have to use other methods.
It's a little bit harder to find. Yeah. It's kind of crazy that it is rare, but I mean, yeah, it's hopefully one day.
It's an MGM title. I mean, I'm really hoping as these companies
all of put it out.
Somebody, come on.
That's all we need. We need fucking Olive to do it.
Yeah. But they suck, Brad. They don't do anything.
Well, they put movies
get
on
over
Blu-ray.
Yourselves. Both of you.
No, yeah. This is one of those films. And it, like I said, there is that HD Master out there. Amazon had it for a while if you had Amazon Prime. There, it was available at some point, so it would be great to have it available again. So hopefully it'll show up on Vudu.com or something like that soon. I don't know. At least I just want to own it. I want to own it and watch it and bask in the 80s in glitter.
Great sex comedy.
All right. Well, I think we are about out of time for today's show, but we want to thank all of you guys for listening. Check out these movies. Definitely track them down. Go over to grindhousevideo.com and track down the Black Cat set from them for sure, as well as the other movies that we've talked about. I will have whatever he has, I will have links in the show notes so you can track them down through there. Make sure you use the code SCREAMCAST10 when checking out at grindhousevideo.com. You'll get a 10% discount for anything orders over $25. Also, of course, go to coffeeshopofhorrors.com and place an order there. You can use the code SCREAMCAST, get 10% off your order there as well. And there, I'll have to find it. I just had a new flavor of theirs that was, Highlander Grog. Holy shitballs. It is good. So I recommend the Highlander Grog. I'm going to be buying myself a big-ass bag of that stuff. But as the holidays are coming up, it's a good, like, kind of holiday-ish, holiday. Spices and stuff. It's fucking good. So
celebrate. Check
that
out.
Also, I want to thank oneofus.net for posting our show over there. You can check out our shows and all the articles we've been posting over at thescreamcast.com. Friday, Black Friday, look for an article and an announcement, Brad, that you'll be writing up, correct?
Is this Friday? No, next Friday.
No, this is posting Thanksgiving week.
Oh, so. Yeah. So countdown, because there's a huge, huge, huge announcement from Vinegar Syndrome. So just, keep an ear and eye out.
Speaking of Vinegar Syndrome, Exploitation TV officially is showcasing films from independent filmmakers that are currently working. Awesome. So that's cool. Support independent and, working filmmakers. You can check out their first entry in that is Dustin Mills' Apple Cart. It's fucking weird. Check it out.
Very cool. All right. That's going to do it for us this week. We'll talk to all of you guys next time. I posted this on Twitter and Facebook, but with the holidays coming up, we may not be able to keep as a weekly schedule with the shows. So just keep an eye on Twitter and Facebook, and we'll let you guys know when the next show will be. So we should have a couple more before the year end for sure. But there will be probably another break in between there, but because of vacations and stuff like that. So Twitter. The_Screamcast on Twitter. And then Facebook is,
Screamcast.
Screamcast podcast. Over on Facebook. I did something where like Screamcast 2014 or something like that on Facebook.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Because anyway. You're 90.
Well, someone else had the name Screamcast on Facebook and they weren't even using it.
You can find us at screamcast@aol.com.
MSN.com.
Find us on Friendster.
Yes. All right. We'll talk to all you guys next time. Bye-bye.
See ya. Bye.
Oh, don't tell me you're leaving. The party's just begun.